Ms. Peterson, good morning.
Good morning, Judge. May it please the court, opposing counsel, I'm Nancy Peterson, and I represent Scott Shannon in this action. The question presented here is, what is the appropriate statute of limitations that applies to the filing of a post-conviction motion given these facts? In this case, Mr. Shannon perfected his appeal to the Court of Appeals after having a jury trial. The Court of Appeals affirmed his conviction and issued the mandate on this case on September 20th of 2011. On October 19th of 2012, Mr. Shannon filed a motion for leave to file an out-of-time motion for post-conviction relief, as well as a motion for post-conviction relief. But the motions were filed more than 1 year after the mandate had been issued. Lancaster County District Court ruled that the motion should be denied as being untimely filed. And we anticipate that the Attorney General will argue that the appropriate statute of limitations to be applied in this case is found in Nebraska Revised Statute 29-3001-4A, which means that there is a one-year statute of limitations upon the filing of a motion for post-conviction relief that runs from the date that the judgment is final, in this case, the day that the Court of Appeals issued the mandate. It is our contention that that is not the appropriate statute of limitations in this case, and that the appropriate statute of limitations can be found at 29-3001-4C. In that statute of limitations, the statute runs 1 year from the date after which an impediment caused by state action which results in a constitutional violation is removed, which prevented the defendant from filing his motion for post-conviction relief. I want to look at each of those factors individually. Was there a state action? At all times relevant to this appeal, Scott Shannon was in the custody and control of the Nebraska Department of Corrections. He was a resident of the Tecumseh Correctional Institution, and he was subject to their rules and regulations. So we have a state agency that's involved here, and that state agency caused a lockdown of the Tecumseh facility beginning on August 2, 2012. As Mr. Shannon stated in his motion, this lockdown limited his ability, in fact precluded it, his ability to get to the law library. He was unable to go to the law library to do his research to file his motion for post-conviction relief.
For how long?
It appears that the impediment was relieved on September 9th of 2012, so approximately a month and 10 days.
Did the district court comment or make any findings that your client could have done this before the lockdown?
Yes, sir. I believe in the order the district court says that the defendant had not proven that there wasn't time before the lockdown during which he could have filed that motion. I would ask the court, though, that that's not what this statute calls for. This statute doesn't say if you had some time, you could have filed it regardless of when this impediment occurred. And as we all know from being lawyers and judges, people don't always get things done until the last minute, don't always get them done before the last minute. And so the fact that he may have had 10 months to get this together doesn't mean that he should be precluded from filing it because he couldn't get it done in that time. He may have had it very much ready to go, but the last pieces were still in the law library and he couldn't get to it. That impediment meant he could not complete his post-conviction review.
And under your analysis of 4C,
yes, ma'am.
Would the defendant have another year after September 9th when he got access to the law library to file his post-conviction action, or are you suggesting that there's some sort of an interim tolling effect?
I am suggesting that 4C is the applicable statute of limitations, which would mean 1 year from September 9th of 2012. However, I would acknowledge that pursuant to the Huggins decision, if this court wanted to implement equitable tolling in this case, it may be an appropriate situation under which to do so, in which case the tolling would have started on August 2nd and would have been ending on September 9th. So there would have been approximately that month and 10 days or so during which the one-year statute of limitations could have been tolled. But I don't think that that's where this case needs to go. I think
counsel,
we have a very clear cut.
So you're saying that I'm guessing penitentiaries normally have maybe two or three lockdowns, let's say a year. So you're saying every time there's a lockdown that year starts over?
I would say that that's where that equitable tolling probably could be triggered in a situation like that. But,
your original answer was you wanted another year for September 9th. So following your logic, if there was three lockdowns, every time there's a lockdown, you think there should be another year.
If there's a lockdown that lasts a day, I don't think that that's the appropriate remedy.
And
to Tecumseh,
where do you draw the line then? Once you cross that line and start granting a year, you say a day. Well, what if somebody else thinks it should be an hour? What if somebody else thinks it should be 2 weeks? I mean, once you go draft a rule, you have to follow the rule in all cases, right?
If the prison is denying access to the law library for a significant period of time, denying reasonable access to the courts for a significant period of time, then I think this is definitely triggered. And I think that's the situation we have here. If the prison is allowed to make rules and regulations to keep the prisoners safe, that's a consequence of being in the prison, that you know they have to do that to keep you safe. But in this case, and if we recall historically, Tecumseh was locked down for a very long time and is probably still in a modified lockdown situation. They've got to find a way to get inmates access to the prisons during those long lockdowns. And that wasn't done here. He was completely out of luck. And he says in his motion, inmates could have gotten to the law library that had motions that had been filed. His was not yet filed, so he was denied access to continue working towards his filing of his motion for post-conviction relief in his situation. So we know that the inmates have that access. We know they have that right to have reasonable access to adequate law facilities and legal help to help them have access to the courts that is guaranteed under the Fifth Amendment. So we know we have a constitutional violation. Now we have to determine, though, has that constitutional violation extended to Mr. Shannon? Because it's not an all-access pass. Not all inmates get to go to the prison library to do their legal research for every case ever. They don't have to have every law book ever written in those law libraries. But in this case, Mr. Shannon is seeking to enforce his constitutional rights. He is seeking to vindicate his basic constitutional rights on a direct appeal. It's a post-conviction action which seeks by its very nature to remedy a denial or infringement of a constitutional right. And that's the type of access to the law libraries that the U.S. Supreme Court has said we need to grant to defendants so that they can pursue these types of actions. So we have a state action, an impediment, a constitutional violation, and a constitutional action that Mr. Shannon was trying to pursue. All of those came together to deny him his right to file the motion for post-conviction relief, and 4C is the appropriate statute of limitations in this case.
Does the remedy that he would have sought determine whether or not all the factors are met?
The remedy that he would have sought in this case...
In the post-conviction, yeah.
He's raising constitutional issues. So he's saying that his constitutional rights were denied, and that's something that had never been reviewed by any court previously. And so that kind of an issue is the kind
of... But what you're saying has not been reviewed. Did he have a direct appeal?
He did.
Okay, so it's not as though he hadn't had one direct appeal.
No, ma'am, but he had trial counsel do that direct appeal. They couldn't allege ineffective assistance counsel on themselves.
I understand that, but what I'm trying to do is determine if it's at all relevant as to the substance of the post-conviction motion to
a
your analysis.
Motion.
And it has to raise a constitutional right.
Yes, ma'am. And okay. If you've raised that in the Court of Appeals, you're out of luck. I mean, you're out of luck on the whole conviction motion as it stands. If you legitimately filed your post-conviction motion appropriately alleging constitutional violations, then I think you're safe. And I think this is the statute remedy and constitutional violation. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions I can answer for the court? I would ask then that the court overturn the decision of the district court and order that the District Court of Lancaster County review this motion for post-conviction relief on its merits and order an evidentiary hearing if they believe it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lewis, good morning again.
Yeah. For the record, the District Court, Nathan Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee, the State of Nebraska. The State does maintain that the operative provision here is subsection 4A, and since Mr. Shannon's motion was not timely under 4A, it was properly denied as untimely. As far as Mr. Shannon's assertion that he falls under subsection 4C, we disagree. In order to fall under 4C, there are two requirements or two required criteria that must be met. Number one, there must be an impediment created by state action that violated the defendant's constitutional rights. And number two, the impediment in question must have prevented the defendant from filing his or her post-conviction motion. Neither criteria was met in this case. As far as the first criteria, Mr. Shannon's failed to establish that the prison lockdown violated his constitutional rights. Prisons often go into lockdown or restrict an inmate's abilities or their activities for legitimate reasons. And the appellant's provided no authority or rationale which establishes that a temporary lockdown or a temporary restriction on an inmate's activities is unconstitutional.
Can you remind me how this case proceeded at the trial level? How this the timeliness issue was brought to the court's attention?
At the trial level, as far as the post-conviction proceeding?
Yeah, on this post-conviction, right.
It was, the 1 year passed, and then approximately a month later he filed his motion.
So did the court take it up sua sponte, or did the state file a motion that it was time barred, or how did this come to the trial court's attention to dismiss as barred?
The court initially took up the motion itself, his motion for leave to file at a time. The court initially took that motion up first. They had a telephonic hearing on that. The state appeared, and the state argued that it was
I'm sorry. Right. Ms. Peterson mentioned that. So there were two things filed initially, leave to file out of time, and here it is.
Leave to file out of time in conjunction with the motion.
Right. Okay. So timeliness came to the court's attention, right, on Mr. Shannon's own motion.
Yes. Okay. And then after that hearing, the state did, in fact, file a written response indicating that opposing it as being out of time. And then the court held another hearing on that.
Okay. So the timeliness issue was framed, and there was an opportunity to hear it at the trial level.
Yes. It was raised by Shannon, it was raised by the state, and it was addressed by the court.
Thank you.
We would submit that he also failed to meet the second criteria under subsection 4C as well, because he's failed to establish that the prison lockdown actually prevented him from filing his post-conviction motion. He could have filed it in the 10 months prior to the lockdown, he could have filed it after the lockdown, or as the district court concluded, there's no evidence that he couldn't have filed it during
the lockdown. So he could have filed it before and then asked to amend later.
Sure.
As long as he established a time frame.
That happens all the time. Of course, permitted all the time. Just get it in and indicate that I'm out of time, or I'd like to move to amend my pleadings, and that happens all the time. Courts allow it all the time. He did none of these things, so we submit that he's failed to establish that he was actually prevented from filing the post-conviction motion, and that he fails to meet the second criteria. Since neither criteria was met, and since we see nothing that distinguishes this case from State v. Huggins, we maintain that the operative provision is 4A, and that his motion is properly denied.
Ms. Peterson suggested that this may be a case where we would want to consider equitable tolling. I'd like to hear your position on that.
As far as equitable tolling, first of all, I mean, Huggins alludes to the fact that it may be available. It doesn't actually establish that it is available in Nebraska. So I guess that's one question that would have to be answered if you do even address the issue. Secondly, with equitable tolling, it wasn't raised below. It seems to me that's a claim that needs to be raised below. In the context of a post-conviction proceeding, it's fundamental that a court, an appellate court, won't consider claims that aren't raised below. And if the state has to raise a statute of limitations argument below, or we're barred from raising it on appeal, it would seem to me that similarly a defendant would have to raise an equitable tolling argument below, or else they can't get the benefit of that on appeal. And I guess my third response, Your Honor, would just be that looking at least the tentative framework that was laid out in Huggins with respect to when equitable tolling would apply. I don't think that it would when I look at those two factors. It would require, number one, he or she's been pursuing his or her rights diligently, and number two, some extraordinary circumstance stood in the way and prevented a timely filing of that petition. To me, it just seems like, at least on the facts of this case or the allegations of this case, equitable tolling would not apply.
Thank you. That was a narrative about how that stuff works, if it were to be adopted.
That's correct. It was not actually adopted. And say we have equitable tolling, but I guess that's, to the extent we have some tentative framework of what it would be, I suppose that's it. If there are no further questions, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal? 46 seconds, Ms. Peterson.
I have nothing further. I would submit the matter unless there are additional questions from the floor. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.